The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody, come on in for hour number two. Glad you are here on this Thursday, the 11th day of April, 2024. 866-660-5759. That is where you call us. That is where you can call, text us on the ViaScan of Las Colinas text line. Folks have been doing so. All kinds of things have been happening around us. And so let us examine a couple, including one on the fly. We have a Cornyn sighting on Fox News. And it's talk about inflation numbers. Inflation number, the consumer price index up, the producer price index up, and so they had Cornyn on in order to talk about that. And so every time I see people who are in the news, in our minds, front of minds, people around whom there is speculation, it's like, all right, what kind of positioning is going on here? What kind of because Senator Cornyn has to know, as he seeks perhaps to be Mitch McConnell's successor, he is pitching to a certain constituency, his fellow senators. He'll be pitching to a wholly different constituency 2 years from now if he seeks re-election. And of course, somebody who seeks to be the Senate Republican leader sounds like somebody who's thinking about getting reelected, and which leads us right to the talk show host's dream, the primary contest between John Cornyn and perhaps Ken Paxton. And just having come off our conversation with Jake Elzey, some of which was Ukraine-based, I was making in preparing to just play this for you here and see how it goes. What are the conservative complaints about Cornyn? They lately, a couple of things, forever war in Ukraine and Second Amendment, this bipartisan so-called gun safety package, and his ability to embrace the constitutional outrage of red flag laws. That's where we go get Uncle Fred's gun, supposedly, in a perfect world, because Uncle Fred has done something disturbing, said something disturbing. We spent all yesterday talking about Ethan Crumbly and his parents going to jail for not doing enough to stop him. The red flag laws enable authorities to come get somebody's guns before they've broken a law, before they've done anything. Now, is there logic to taking somebody who is really, truly saying frightening things and giving off, you know, serious, as the term suggests, red flags? Okay, sure. But that might be kind of a local thing and kind of a maybe. I mean, I'd rather institutionalize somebody than take their guns, right? The point being, if there's a mental health argument that could be made, if somebody is that wacky, then maybe they don't need to be alone in the house, much less, you know, own a shotgun or whatever. So the abuse of this is going to be rampant. As bitter friends, relatives, you know, et cetera, jilted lovers, whoever, go to left-leaning, gun-grabbing judges and say, yeah, this guy, Fred Jones, we think he's a danger to himself and others. Next thing you know, they're, boom, 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 yeah, Fred, we're coming to get your guns. Wait a minute, what? Yeah, you're a danger to yourself. That's red flag laws. They are stone cold unconstitutional. That was a huge problem for Cornyn a few months ago, and it remains one in an atmosphere where in his Texas history, he has always won easily. He has always been just conservative enough to be just acceptable enough to a large majority of voters that he has never really been threatened from the right. Till now, perhaps. Well, guess what? It's not now. He's not up for re-election. Now, that's Ted Cruz. By the way, we got to talk about Ted Cruz and Colin Allred here in a minute as well. Because a lot of people, do I get asked all the time, can Colin Allred beat Ted Cruz? Can Colin Allred beat Ted Cruz? No. Of course, what I said about Beto, too. But I was right. But I didn't see Beto coming within 2.5 percentage points of Ted Cruz. Could the same thing happen with Colin Allred? Let's get to that here in a second. 866-660-5759. But as for Cornyn, his fate, should he decide to seek re-election, will depend on two things that will be more evident 2 years from now. And that is, how is his fate playing out? And how's that whole Ken Paxton thing working out? Because what Ken Paxton will be doing is continuing to be the most conservative and effective attorney general in America and up against the Cornyn track record. Here's where things get a smidge complicated. The Trump presidency, if we have our act together and are blessed to enjoy it, I think it'll make Cornyn better. It did before. Trump made McConnell better. And when I say made them better, I probably should say made them act better, made them vote better, made them talk better. Whether it actually made them better. I mean, you get to see the real guy when Trump's not around, which is why McConnell has turned into a Swiss cheese conservative, an occasional warrior, whom we thank for so many things, but who annoys us in many ways. And ditto with Cornyn. He's done a bunch of good things, please. But the stuff where his conservatism fails is a constant annoyance to some conservatives. And if he is able to patch up those holes and make conservatives feel better, he'll be harder to beat. It'd be hard to beat anyway, because it's always hard to beat an incumbent, especially if that conservative is Senate. Here's a big question everybody has. Will we be enthralled? Will we fawn over the fact that our guy is Senate Majority Leader? Maybe some will. I don't care. If I'm voting for you, if you're before me as a choice in the primary, I don't give a flip whether you are Senate Majority Leader. It'll be what are your votes? Where's your head? Where's your heart? Where's your spine? I mean, if I'm down in Texas 21, if you show me a voter who's a real conservative in Texas 21 and go, but I really love the Dade Phelan as the Speaker of the House, that's moronic. You got to go for what somebody stands for. And if you're a voter in Texas 21, you go, hey, I really like Democrat chairs. I really like that there was obstruction of school choice and some election integrity. I'm really glad of that. Then you are a Dade Phelan voter. Go you be you. But this whole thing of, he's Speaker of the House or, he's Senate Majority Leader is for the birds. Anyway, though, Senator Cornyn from the Capitol Dome, and Brian Kilmeade asked about the producer price index up 2% year over year.
Well, this is what happens when you spend trillions of dollars unnecessarily. It's like putting gasoline on the fire. The Federal Reserve has raised interest rates, as we all know, which has made buying almost everything, including housing, much more expensive. But basketful of groceries is up 36% over what it was when President Biden took office, and this is what happens when you just recklessly spend money and accrue more national debt.
So people want to see a rate cut. Are we going to see that? The president's still predicting that.
Well, the problem is, Brian, there's two ways to try to control it. One is to raise rates higher, not lower, and the other is to slow down on all the reckless spending. And so I don't know what the Fed's going to do, but certainly President Biden hadn't slowed down in shoveling cash out the door.
He hasn't. Let's talk about what's happening with security. We saw the FBI director. He had a series of statements. He's going to be talking again today. Talk about he's never really seen so many threats from so many different angles. And I was just...
Well, what Brian's talking about is there is... And this is almost impossible to talk about. And by that, I mean, talk about anything. But I mean, in terms of how exactly do you analyze this? How do you come at this? American intelligence gatherers have divined that Iran is probably thinking about attacking somebody. Might be Israel. Might be us. Okay. What do we do with that? It's funny. Everybody talks about the September 10th mentality. And what they mean by that is the day before 9/11, we were whistling blithely through life. You know, everything's great. Do-de-do-de-do. And then, boom, they hit us because we weren't expecting it. Even though there's this memo lying around on various desks that said, Bin Laden considering hitting multiple targets in America. We talked a lot yesterday about 2020 hindsight. This is the phenomenon that kicks in there. Through 2020 hindsight, that memo looks like a total smoking gun. Why didn't we act on that? Well, because Bin Laden thinks about hitting targets in America every day at lunch. He did it on September 10th, did it on September 9th, did it on September 8th, did it on April 3rd, did it on February 24th of that year and previous years. So, like, duh, of course he does. It's the fever dream of terrorists to do terrible things to us. And we'd like to think that we're on a secure, vigilant footing. Nothing wakes you up like actually being attacked. And that's what we experienced on 9/11. So right now, obviously 9/11 happened. It's more than 20 years in the rearview mirror. But with an intel message, a warning, that Iran may be thinking of attacking Israel or the United States, all right, are we on some higher type of alert? Are we being extra vigilant in various locations? I would hope so. You know, is your head on a swivel at Walmart? I mean, it's hard to know exactly how to process that. Anyway, that's the behind the Kilmeade question to Cornyn about what authorities are saying this week.
Disturbed by what we were seeing in Michigan, in Dearborn, Michigan, over the weekend. And it turns out the guy that was leading these Death to America chants was doing the same thing in 2020 and 2021. Listen to the fact is we don't hear anything from the Democratic governor condemning the remarks. Don't hear anything from the president on these remarks. So Rashida Tlaib, who represents this area of Dearborn, said this when asked.
Congresswoman Tlaib,
Fox News. I don't talk to Fox News.
At a rally in your district, people were chanting death to America. Do you condemn?
I do not talk to Fox News.
But do you condemn chants of death to America?
She's trapped at the members elevator. And what she's referring to is, I don't know, you can Google this. There's a guy holding a, you know, pro-Hamas rally, and the crowd gets all lit up. In America, supposedly in America. Dearborn, Michigan. I guess it's still in America at the moment. Death to America, death to America.
Talk to people that use racist tropes.
What? I don't talk to people that use racist tropes? What racist trope is at play here?
Can't you just say whether or not you condemn people chanting death to America?
Okay.
Do you think that was a hard question?
Kilmeade.
Condemn people that say death to America in America?
No, it reminded me of the president of Harvard who was asked to condemn racism on campus, and mm-hmm. she was unable to do so. It's frankly outrageous, and we should all condemn that.
Right. Iran, we understand, according to reports, is getting the sense that they're ready to retaliate for taking out of their commanders in Damascus. What have you heard, Senator, and what do you think our response should be, knowing how shaky our relationship is now with Israel, or this White House is with Israel?
Well, it's pretty clear that Iran wants to retaliate against Israel, but what I'm concerned about as well is they retaliate against their allies, like the United States. And as we've discussed before, our open borders mean that people could be infiltrating into the United States and being released by the Biden administration or part of the 1.8 million gotaways and organizing another terrorist attack in the United States. It only took 26 people to kill 3,000 Americans on 9/11, and a whole lot more than that have made their way across the border for what purpose, we don't really know.
So in listening to that, first of all, it's this morning. It was like within the last hour. It's newsworthy. You talked about a lot of different things. But also at kind of a higher level, that's going to be Cornyn playing to his strengths. Give me, you know, Cornyn on the border. Give me Cornyn on spending. Give me Cornyn on any one of a number of, sort of red meat kitchen table issues, and he's going to be just fine. The things that drive conservatives crazy tend to be gun rights. It will be forever war in Ukraine, but I've told you all last year, I told you, this is going to become a bigger deal as the year plays out, as the war plays out. How much of one, I don't know. It depends. There's so much other stuff. I mean, it's a target-rich environment, if you'll pardon that analogy. And so then the other big X factor, of course, is time. As I said a couple of minutes ago, in evaluating a Cornyn versus Paxton, you know, U.S. Senate primary 2 years from now, the key questions are, how are both these guys doing? I think I can fairly well book that Paxton will continue to be a conservative hero and deserve to be. Will a second Trump term, well underway, provide Cornyn an opportunity to, pardon this, rehabilitate himself in the minds of many conservative voters? There will be those, and it's funny, and part of it is because it's Paxton. And I got to tell you, it's weird. Isn't it wild? Won't it be wild if a United States senator is imperiled 2 years from now by, if John Cornyn's in trouble, it's Dade Phelan's fault? Track it back. The Paxton impeachment is one of the worst backfires in recent American political history, not just Texas. And that blowback, and that backdraft, whatever analogy you want to use, motorsports or firefighting, has burned and stung a lot of incumbents, and some more are going down in this. We hear talk about forever war. How about the forever runoff? It takes us forever to get to May 28th. You know why that is, right? I'm all about military ballots, overseas ballots, making sure that they're processed and handled with care and accuracy. There's no way in the world that should take 3 stinking months. So just change that. Yeah, it might involve changing some federal laws, some state. Fine, do it. Do it. And I'll tell you know what? There is an odd incumbency protection angle I'm getting to this. Because don't you really just wish that voters could, down in Texas 21, it's like, hello, we're trying to take out Dade Phelan. Hello. There are a couple of races around here where conservative activism and the blood is running hot. It still will on May 28th. But that gives a whole lot of incumbents a whole lot of time. If Dade Phelan tweets me one more time about AI, whatever, dude. It gives all of these incumbents a chance to go, oh, look over here. Forget about what I did. Look over here. Here's some, 4 other great things that I did, so you can forget the terrible things I did. Every day, just the constant drone of them trying to preserve their jeopardized hides. We've got to have these runoffs sooner, man. Got to have these runoffs sooner. But wouldn't it be something if Paxton's ascendancy, which is fueled absolutely by the failed impeachment, which was absolutely a vendetta of Dade Phelan, if Paxton's star continues to rise, and that's what helps him beat John Cornyn in a Senate primary in 2026, won't that be something? 8:24. Coming up on News Time with Nikki Whaley. Interesting text line, bias Ken of Las Colinas text line, reaction on what the next job Ken Paxton might hold is. It's basically 3, and they're all really good gigs. Just 60 seconds here, probably less. I mentioned that it was so weird as Joe Biden was in the Oval Office welcoming, I guess that's what you call it, the Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, reading from index cards. And again, Joe Biden should never be on camera reading from index cards because you have to look down to do that. And it makes it appear and sound like he's about to nod off.
Well, Fumio, welcome back to the White House. Welcome back to the Oval Office. It's good to have you here. Good to see you again. When we were here last year, we said the role being played by the United States and Japan is becoming even greater. And I couldn't agree more with your assertion back then. And what we see in our joint support for Ukraine in the face of Russia's vicious assault is just outrageous.
Whew. Okay. Into the newsroom we go. 8:31. Mark Davis. Here's Nikki Whaley.
I want to tell.
Take a Beatles break every once in a while. From Revolver, I want to tell you. You know, the George Harrison blessing is the George Harrison curse. If he had not been a Beatle, well, one of two things if George Harrison had not been a Beatle. A, we'd never have heard of him. Or he might have been one of the, like, top five songwriters ever. Because I just love me some George. Love me some George. All right, this is one of those days, one of those seasons where we just need a full raft of congressional opinion to answer what the heck is going on, what the heck is going on in our country, what the heck is going on with Speaker Johnson, poor guy, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's go to the 4th District of Texas. Let's say hi. Let's get some blunt honesty and just sparkling commentary from our friend Congressman Pat Fallon. Welcome, sir. How you doing?
Mark, how are you doing? You are a great American.
I try, man. I try. I do. So listen, Speaker Johnson under fire. What's going on?
Well, you know, the guy's got a very difficult job with as razor thin as majorities can be. I think this has got to be historic at this point. And he's just trying to navigate through it and trying to get through. I'm trying to give the fellow enough runway so he can have like a full year, you know, with the appropriations process to actually succeed, because he is the most conservative speaker we've ever had, literally, in history. So he's facing a few things. Yesterday, we were going to vote on FISA reforms, and lo and behold, there was the rule and how we're going to vote on it that got shot down because every Democrat voted against it, and I think roughly 20 Republicans. So we were back at the drawing board there. And what the thing that I'm concerned about, Mark, to be honest, is I don't want to have a clean re-up with FISA because it was abused tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of times. I want significant reforms. And there's legislation pending that has upwards of over 50 specific reforms that would prevent and prohibit future abuses and institute severe penalties. And if these safeguards had been in place, President Trump would have never been spied on because it would have been egregious felonies that a lot of folks don't want to risk or they end up in the can. So I don't want a clean one. I could be, because it is 702. So just so your listeners know what 702 is, it's when we spy on foreign actors that are overseas without a warrant because they don't have constitutional protections. But like if an American were to contact them, what the FBI had been doing is just checking those people out too without giving them their constitutional protection. So we have to make sure that we do it the right way.
Gotcha. So you talk about, and I think you phrased it in an interesting way. Can we give the guy a year, give him some runway, a superb analogy. And yet there are going to be people, you know, your Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene contingent who deserve admiration at times for the gutsiness of their conservatism, but sometimes I just scratch my head and go, I mean, dude, does another speaker battle help us now? Does it hurt us now? Can we just let's hash things out? Please, hashing things out is great, but a Groundhog Day series of repeating speaker battles, not in our best interest.
Well, we have to be realistic with expectations, right? I mean, we're a divided government. We have the narrowest of Republican majorities in the House. But Chuck Schumer's running the Senate, and Joe Biden's in the White House. I don't want it to be that way, but it is the way it is currently. And people will be voting, Mark, for president in 5 months. There's, you know, when early voting kicks off in October.
Yep.
I can't believe that. When did October become
five? I was going to say, don't start another talk show. Early voting in October. Oh, God.
You know, so I guess 6 months. But anyway, nonetheless, it's going to happen. And if we removed Mike, first of all, with who? And the Democrats will be clicking their heels again. And I want the focus to be on their awful policies, 40-year high inflation, 20-year high mortgage interest rates. They just are addicted to spending. They have no real solutions. And they just say, Trump, 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 because he's the boogeyman. They don't have – you cannot defend the last 3.5 years of Joe Biden, because I hope when they do have the debates, if they do in October, President Trump simply says, are you better off 4 years ago than you were today? And most Americans, considering real wages are down almost 5%, and we're 19% poorer as individuals, we're going to say no.
Of course they are. And I recall, I'm old enough to actually remember, when Carter said that to America, standing there with Carter. But there's just no way in the world there's going to. I mean, Trump will have to say that from the campaign trail or from the lobby of whatever courthouse he's in at the time, because there's no way in the world they let Biden onto a debate stage. Is there?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that the theory was at the State of the Union that from medical members, that colleagues of mine, they probably had him so juiced up on Adderall. You know, who knows what they're juicing him up with? But wow. your body eventually gets used to it, and the dosage didn't have the effect. So yeah, I had never been in really the same room with him until the State of the Union, and been 3 feet away from him. And I spoke to him. I asked him if he wanted to stop the Biden border crisis pins. And it was really odd, Mark. I mean, so picture this. He looks at me as I spoke to him.
Yeah.
And he looked at the button.
Right.
He looked back at me and he said, no. It was really methodical, like a robot. It's so slow.
Oh my gosh. I gotta say, that's quite the move. Asking if President Biden wants a stop the Biden border crisis button. I think there was a 50-50 chance he accepts it and puts it on his lapel, not knowing what it was. That would have been a W. That would have been a W. Congressman Pat Fallon is here. Help me help pro-lifers. I got a Star Telegram column it posted yesterday. It's still there. Essentially telling all of my pro-life brothers and sisters, get off Trump's back. Anybody who wanted President Trump to get out there and say, hey, federal abortion ban. Two reasons why no. Number one, he loses if he does that. And number two, the minute we try to talk about like a national 15-week ban or something like that, that would be America saying we no longer want the states to do this the way the defeat of Roe v. Wade made possible. We want to make a federal rule. And if we start making federal rules on protecting the unborn, we're one election cycle away from a federal rule that threatens the unborn. So just take that ball and run with it. Am I right?
100% correct. We have 50 laboratories of democracy for a reason. An issue that's not addressed by the Constitution, Mark, as you know, 10th Amendment, is left to the states. They did not talk about abortion at all in that Constitution. So it is clearly a state issue. That's why Roe v. Wade was, regardless of whether you're pro-choice or pro-life, Roe v. Wade was a terrible legal decision because it was unconstitutional. And it should have been overturned. It never should have been ruled the way it was years ago. So, you know, we saw what the left will do when they control all levers of government. If you recall, when Joe Biden came into office, Pelosi was running the House, Schumer the Senate. They tried to pass H.R. 1 and H.R. 4, which were federal election laws that were going to tell the states how they're going to elect federal members of Congress and how they're going to elect the president. They put their thumb on the scale. If either of those bills had passed, we would never have seen another Republican administration in our lifetimes. So I don't want the federal government telling the states what to do and what not to do when it wasn't addressed in the Constitution to begin with.
Got any favorites on the Trump VP list? Multiple names are allowed.
Well, I heard, you know, I will serve if asked. I'm not on the list. I'm about 748th, I think, on the list.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
You know, Byron Donalds is highly talented. Colleague of mine from Florida, he's been talked about. He causes the left consternation because he's African-American, highly intelligent, very talented, dynamic personality, and he's very successful in his own right. So they say that can't happen in America.
I know.
Byron says, yeah, it can. You just have to believe in the free markets and America will do for you. Anyway, I think that Governor Huckabee, in Arizona, mm-hmm. in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I actually talked to her dad about that. Uh-huh. He said, I don't know, she's having a good time, you know, to be an exec, but she might do it if he asks. Christy Nelson been talked about. I don't honestly think he'll pick her.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Scott's been talked about. So I'm helped, to be honest, I'm really curious.
Yeah, I am too. And I think that if there's a Vegas line on this, there should be a line that says nobody we're talking about right now. Because I think it'd be like the ultimate Trumpian thing. It'll be somebody that makes sense ultimately. I mean, it won't be something disconcerting or a disconnect, but I think it might be somebody who's just not even on the buzz list. Speaking of what folks we know in the Trump administration, takes us right back to some Texas stuff you and I have been talking about. So Cornyn was on Fox News last hour talking about inflation, where he'll always be fine. There's a lot of buzz talking about a possible Cornyn-Paxton U.S. Senate primary in 2 years. Oh, my gosh. And the text line went ablaze saying, nah, there may be two other jobs that Paxton may be interested in. One would be running for governor instead of U.S. Senate. Maybe. And the other would be that there's a who in the world else is a better chance to be Trump's actual attorney general? What do you think?
I think if we have a Republican Senate, then, you know, because they're going to have to confirm the AG, then that would be something. Because I know Ken is close. I'm pretty close with Ken personally, and mm-hmm. he's close with President Trump. They're very fond of each other, and they're, you know, kindred spirits in the conservative realm. That could be. That would be excellent. I would, you know what? I would love to see Ken Paxton be, you know, President Trump's personal attorney, too. I don't know what he would take if he would take that. But, yeah, he would be a great U.S. AG. I don't think he's – if Governor Abbott runs in 26, I don't think Ken would challenge him.
No, I do not.
The height, yeah, he's at the height of his political popularity at this juncture. But I know with Cornyn, to be quite honest, there are a few members of our congressional delegation that are making rumblings. And some are just, you know, not themselves making them, but, you know, I hear activists talking about it. Like there's a few that could do that, and they would be excellent.
Oh, as possible challengers to Cornyn?
Uh-huh.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll give you one. You give me one.
Okay. Well, just I will say that
it's just buzz. It is not. Listen, you're the actual congressman. I'm just a radio guy. This is not the notion of, hey, I've heard this person mobilizing to run against Cornyn. It's just I've heard people say maybe this person should. I'll start. Beth Van Dyne.
Yep. Ronnie Jackson.
Yep. Yep. Okay.
And then folks that are, I mean, the conservatives are saying those names, and the liberal types. No, I shouldn't say liberal. I didn't mean that at all.
Oh, Freudian slip.
Yeah. More just, you know, kind of your country club mainstream, yep. Conservatives would say like, Dan Crenshaw. Now, Dan has never said that. He's never said that he wanted to run or anything like that.
You know,
but those are the names because he has a national profile.
He does. And for the last 60 seconds, because you are the congressman, help me, because I love Crenshaw. Is every once in a while, is there something that makes me a little nutty? I don't know. And God, what did Tucker call him? Eye patch McCain. Of course, don't get me started on Tucker lately. You know, what's the next lunatic he can interview? But give me a 60-second skinny on Brother Crenshaw.
No, I think, Dan, we don't always agree, but that's okay. You know, you're never going to always agree with everybody. I think that if you look at our voting records and scorecards, clearly I'm the more conservative one. But does that make me the perfect conservative? Am I too conservative? All that stuff. So, you know, I take the Reagan rule of if you're with me 80% of the time, you're 80%.
Absolutely. But in order yeah. to understand what would, Lynn, let's stipulate he's right on most things. We love him and his heart for service and his actual service. Absolutely. But what are the couple of things where you got, where there's a difference where Dan has a conservative Swiss cheese hole? What's a thing or two?
You know, I don't keep track of every other member of Congress. It's hard enough to keep track with my schedule.
Understand.
But I think there might have been – we have to choose our words carefully, particularly when we're in federal office.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a person says something that they regret later, and then it gets the grassroots riled up. I think he called some of the fellas, negotiating terrorists when they were doing the thing. And I think he does regret that, in that term, and he didn't mean it. Look, Dan is highly intelligent. I think he's a solid member of Congress, but we have a great delegation. We have a lot of talent in the bullpen.
No doubt. We have 25
members of Congress, Republican members of Congress from Texas, and there's only two U.S. Senate seats. So we have plenty of people in the bullpen that can step up. And I do like to see blood moving every once in a while. And honestly, I don't like it when people serve over 20 years. It's way too long. Move on. The founders never intended it that way. And, you know, kind of move on down the road.
So, very cool.
In 26, we'll see what happens.
All right, very good. Well, speaking of moving on down the road, we will now another great segment with Pat Fallon. Appreciate you, sir. Always. Thanks for being on.
Thanks, Mark. Take care. God bless.
Fourth District Congressman Pat Fallon. We cover it all. We just do. He enables us to do that. 8:52. All right. A rousing conversation with Pat Fallon. I think the Dan Crenshaw gripes, They are a couple. One, he was deeply in love with that that border package that Biden wanted and the Senate wanted. That was just inadequate. So maybe Crenshaw is not the border warrior you might want. Also, he was very interested in keeping Kevin McCarthy as speaker, which is not inherently problematic. But when there were people who were looking to upgrade at that position, which I think we did with Mike Johnson, please let that be true. He said, we can't let the terrorists win. Unfortunate use. And he did walk that back. So anyway, the reason Crenshaw came up is the possibility of members of Congress who might primary Cornyn in 26. I'll tell you, if Paxton primaries Cornyn in 26, whether it's, you know, some of my favorite members of Congress who have been mentioned, like Beth Van Dyne, like Ronny Jackson, I don't think they need to do it, because Paxton will take up all the oxygen. Just as if Paxton will not challenge Abbott in a primary in 26, because Abbott, talk about reformation of, bolstering of, rehabilitation of conservative reputation. Abbott has done it in spades. So he's just not beatable in a Republican primary anymore. All right, here's what else you can't beat. An opportunity to chat about stuff with you in the 9 o'clock hour. If you're on hold, don't move. Get right to your calls first thing. And then other stuff I haven't even brought up yet. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 859.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.